I'd like to ask, or perhaps get you to reflect for but a moment, what or who are the things that stir things up just a wee bit? I'm sure if we were to put together a list of topics, we could soon come together with a list of things that we shouldn't talk about because they stir people up too much. Perhaps, though, on the slightly more humorous side of things, perhaps you're like me and like to stir things up just a little bit, just to launch something into a conversation to get people all flustered and confused. Maybe you have a friend like that, or maybe you're a bit like me and like to just stir things up just a wee bit, just enough to cause a wee bit of controversy or to get people scratching their head. In this account, in the narrative, we hear that the man longed to be in the pool when the waters were stirred up. We don't know what caused that stirring of the waters, but either way, we know that he longed to be in there. Perhaps it was for their medicinal or healing qualities. Well, as we look at this account, indeed this explosive account of this man being healed, and then all the conflict that comes out of it, what starts to become apparent is that it was not just the waters that were being stirred up in the pool. Much more was being stirred up in this account. For example, the whole notion of how we understand Sabbath, that is the day of rest that God instituted. The whole nature of how we understand this, well, this is something that is stirred up, brings a bit of controversy. Likewise, who Jesus is and the authority that he has, these are all things that are getting stirred up with a gigantic wooden spoon. But not only that, later Jesus broaches the subject of sin, what that does to our relationship with God. If ever there was something to stir people up, their outlook, their perspective, and so too the conversations that they have, well, the notion of sin is certainly one of these things. So we look this morning at things that are being stirred up. And of course, we learn that Jesus is certainly stirring things amongst us and amongst those around. I'm going to suggest that we start with a bit of a theological stir. Here we go. We're off. Now, I love theological chat as much as the next person. That phrase doesn't sound quite right, actually. I love theological chat more than many people, actually. I quite enjoy engaging with these things. Perhaps it's a topic that switches you right off. But when I was at university, I would quite enjoy dialoguing with friends and classmates and discussing points and all the rest. Still quite enjoy it when I get the opportunity to discuss all that that means. Maybe perhaps Martin and I will be found having a discussion about some theological topic. Likewise, there's a minister's forum online, and sometimes we chat together about different theological things, and people will contribute views and ideas, and it's really good to stretch your thought and your imagination about these things. Well, here, this morning, there's a bit of a stir, all to do with a simple task of rolling up a mat, rolling up a simple sleeping mat. Now, if you've ever been camping, you know that this isn't a particularly arduous task. You roll it up, you stick it on or in your rucksack, and job's a good one. I don't know many people that have broken sweat with such a task. Likewise, if you perhaps come along to toddlers or to the creche or to mum and me, at the end we have to roll away and put away the brightly coloured rugs that the kids play on. Now, we might have to hoover up all the crumbs and all the rest, but it's not a particularly arduous task to roll up this rug and put it away. How on earth could we have a theological stirring because of something so simple as putting away a mat? But what we see is that the day in which this took place was the Sabbath. Now, from Genesis, we know that God created the world in 6 days. And on the seventh, he rested. And he called his people to do the same. I don't know about you, but if I was to try and work 7 days a week and continue doing that, well, at some point, the wheels are going to fall off. My health is going to suffer. My relationships are going to suffer. And so God, quite rightly, calls us to work for six and to rest on the seventh. In fact, it's one of the Ten Commandments. Commandment number four, you shall observe the Sabbath. However, the religious powers at B, particularly in the context in which Jesus found himself, they got into this situation where they had an overdrawn and stretched out interpretation of this. They were so focused on following the letter of the law that it became prescriptive. It became a challenge, and in fact, it became a burden in itself. The very burden that they set out to avoid was becoming so apparent as they stretched and as they tried harder and harder to make the Sabbath observed. Well, here in the midst of this, Jesus causes a stir. He tells the man to do what is firstly a relatively simple task, to roll up his mat, but more so, he heals the man on the Sabbath. What a stir and what a controversy. Yet what a stir and what a controversy that it is a stir and a controversy. Jesus was making this man well, yet feathers were ruffled. Noses were out of joint, all because this took place on the Sabbath. Well, if you think that that causes a stir, as they say, you ain't seen nothing yet. Because Jesus would go on to show that actually he had a unique relationship with the Father. You see, after it unfolds about what Jesus had done for this man, he has the occasion to defend himself. And in his defense, Jesus says this. Ken, could you click it forward for me? In his defense, Jesus says this. My Father is always at his work to this very day, and I too am working. Surfacing here at this point in John's Gospel is this claim of a unique relationship with God the Father. There Jesus is defending his actions, and instead of calming the situation, instead of stilling the waters, well, there would be even more agitation. There would be even more stirring. Jesus is making it quite plain that God is his Father. There are two possible responses to this. There is no middle ground. And each is as explosive as the other. The first is to swing to the same side as those Jewish leaders, those who are thoroughly incensed by what Jesus has said. Surely this is blasphemous to claim that kind of relationship with God the Father. Can't just write Jesus off as being a nice chap who said some nice things, because these claims are so bold, indeed perhaps even offensive for those who reject them. How dare he say such a thing? Yet swinging to the other side of the disturbed and stirred waters, is the possibility that people might accept that Jesus is who he says he is, that he is the Son of God. Making statements like this, in that context, things were bound to be stirred up. And as we see, it's a stir that leads to a response. Well, theology is one thing. And of course, we can look around the claims of Jesus and we can understand more about the Sabbath. But that is not the only stirring that was going on. Perhaps, Ken, we could go on to the next slide. Because here we think about a spiritual stir that was taking place. give you a wee insight into the way in which my mind works. I get quite agitated when things aren't quite so, just but for certain things. For example, I like my bike to be just so. For example, if the tire pressure is not quite right, well then I'll probably go back to the shed and pump it up. Now the fallout of this is that I can see an ill-inflated tire from 100 paces. And the news, the sound of gears and chains that are quite out of sync for me is like nails on a blackboard. Perhaps there's things like that where you maybe just get a wee bit agitated. Poor spelling or cleanliness or whatever it might be. There'll be things that from 100 yards you can spot. You can see when it's not right, when it's out of sync, when it's out of kilter. When we think of the humorous examples, what though of the examples in the world around that we see? Where are the places where things are out of sync? Where are the places where things are out of kilter? Where things aren't as they're meant to be? Is it in the case of the physical ailments, as seen by this man who had been lame for 38 years? Is it in terms of the emotional well-being of people? Folks who are in the pits of despair. Is this where we see the greatest ailment in society? Or what about finance and wealth or lack of it? People who are so desperately poor that there is no way out. No way out of that desperation. Or what about people who are caught up in what the papers call affluenza? So affluent, so rich that they've lost touch with reality. Are these the things that greatest burden our society? So are these the things that cause the greatest burden to our society? Are these the things that are so apparent as the ills, as the concerns that are all around? Well, yes, they have their place. And yes, as part of the church, we seek to care for those who are broken and who are hurting. But yet the words of Jesus here stir something up that's to do with our spirit. Stir something up that's to do with our spiritual well-being. Here's what Jesus said to the man. Perhaps you've read it already. Later, Jesus found him. He'd gone to the temple. I wonder if he'd gone to reflect on all that had happened. Either way, there he was. And Jesus said this to him, "See, you are well again. Stop sinning, or something worse may happen." You see, a moral lameness would be far worse than the physical lameness from which this man had just been delivered. Stop your sinning, says Jesus. I have to be careful how we throw that word around. But he makes it quite plain. Something worse than a physical limitation would become apparent. And that is the separation from God. Walking apart from him. Walking away from his ways. Now, as often as there has been a minister who has thumped on the side of a pulpit, we have a bad track record when we mention that simple three-letter word. When we throw it round with fingers that point. But here is the thing, we daren't underestimate it. We daren't write it off. The comedian Lenny Henry spoke about how when he was younger, the way in which the word sin was thrown around. It was used to refer to couples who lived together before they were married, saying, "Living in sin." He jokes that actually it sounded like quite a fun place to go and live. He wondered if he could go there for his holidays. That was the mindset of a younger Lenny Henry. Yes, it is the case that we have a bad track record about broaching the subject. But dare we not broach the subject? Jesus said quite plainly, stop your sinning, or something worse may happen. Worse than any physical lameness would be to be separate from God. Later on, again in his defense of why Jesus had healed the man, he says this in chapter 5, verse 24. Very truly I tell you the truth. Whoever hears my word and believes him who sent me has eternal life. He will not be condemned. He has crossed over from death to life. Here is what we are talking about. It is our eternal well-being, grounded and made firm in Jesus Christ. In Mark's Gospel, chapter 2, verse 17, we're talking about the calling of Levi, the tax collector. Jesus says this, "It is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners." In the Message translation, it calls them the sin-sick. People who, because of the darkness or whatever else in their life, are walking apart from God. It is for those that Christ came. Yes, in these signs we see healing, we see well-being being brought about, and we dare not belittle that. But these are written that we might believe. Believe that we can have new life in Jesus Christ. Ken, if we could go on to the next slide, I'd like to tell you the inspirational story of this young lad, Nick Vujic. Nick Vujic has a condition called tetraamelia syndrome, a rare disorder characterized by the absence of all four limbs. I've been learning more about Nick's story this past week, and if you do the whole Twitter thing, I've put his name in the bulletin if you want to go and search a bit more about him. Understandably, as a young man growing up with this condition, you can begin to guess the kind of questions that would come to the fore. Why? Why me? All these things. He's open and honest about the struggles that he had. In an interview, I heard him say these words, and it struck me so much that I scribbled them down. He said, "I knew arms and legs wouldn't give me peace. I needed to know the truth of who I am, why I am here, where I am going when I'm not here, and where I'm going when I'm not here. And I haven't found that truth anywhere other than in Jesus Christ." Now, Nick still has a pair of shoes, he says, because he believes in miracles. But he knows that it's not legs and arms that will make him well spiritually. It's knowing who he is, why he's here, and where he is going when he's not here. Where are those truths found? Where are those certainties found? Well, that's in Jesus Christ. I think Nick's story is one that stirs things up. People might be tempted to pity him, to look at his situation and think how desperate it is. Yet with such charisma, he shows such hope about the situation that he finds himself in. He really is an inspirational figure. If you get a chance to listen online to some of the things that he shares, then please do. Nick's story stirs things up. Ken, let's go on to the last slide. Back one. Excuse me. Things were stirred up there at the poolside. Things were stirred up there in the temple when Jesus said those words. Of course, though, all this interaction, though, started with that simple question to the man. Do you want to get well? Little would he know how his situation would change. Little did he know about what would unfold. But here, as we have these accounts recorded for us, these things resound out to us. These things are still stirring us up. Perhaps you're stirred by the challenge of who Jesus is, what he said about himself, his authority, his sonship of God. Perhaps you're stirred by what he says about our spiritual well-being. turning away from a life of sin to a new hope that is only found in Jesus Christ. I have two challenges to leave us with this morning. The first is to be open to being stirred ourselves. To be ready to let that water of our soul be so agitated, to be stirred such that we reflect on these truths, that we reflect on who Jesus is. But also, I challenge you to think about how you can stir things up yourself. Now, yes, I said I like to launch things into conversation to stir matters up a wee bit. I'm not going to suggest that you go out with an aggressive sense and try and stir things up and launch things into conversation just to upset people. But is there not people out there who are hurting? People who are lost? People who are caught up in desperation? Dare we broach these subjects that stir things up so much that they think too of their own standing before God? Are we ready to stir things up just as Nick does by saying that the only hope that we have found is not in arms and legs, wealth, or whatever else, but it's only found in Jesus Christ? Are we ready to stir things up in our growth, in Scotland, in the United Kingdom and beyond? Let's pray together.